The Advent season is something really, really exciting. And I don't know about you, but Christmas is supposed to be exciting. But this, there's something special about this year. I don't know if you have felt it as well. But for me, this particular Christmas, I'm just super, super excited about it. I don't know what it is about this one. But I've talked to a number of different people who are all like, there's something special about this Christmas. I'm just super, super excited. And I'm not asking Pastor Tracy, because Pastor Tracy is always excited about Christmas. There's no this one or the one before that or the next one. It's just always going to be super, super exciting. But for me, this particular Christmas is very, very exciting. And when we look at Advent, sort of the anticipation of the coming of Christ, there are a number of things that that we hear on a regular basis, right? We hear the Christmas story all the time, and most of us, even if we didn't grow up in the church, we're probably very, very familiar with the characters. Every single week, starting today, every single week, we want to take a look at some of the well-known characters of the Christmas story and kind of explore together what they heard and what they saw and what they experienced. And today I want to start off this Advent season with the topic of trust in uncertainty. You know what? I kind of feel like I'm closed in. I'm going to just move this here for a second. I'm sorry, guys, but usually I preach from down there, and it gives me opportunity to move around because I'm a mover. And if you've ever heard me preach before, you know that I'm kind of all over the place. This, I kind of feel confined every once in a while. And then this space right here is really, really narrow for me. So sorry about that. Trust and uncertainty is actually doesn't even have to be a Christmas or Advent topic. It can be a topic that people can preach on probably for an entire year and not ever repeat themselves on anything. But as we're talking about trust and uncertainty and wanting to bring in the characters of the Christmas story, today I want to talk specifically about the character of Mary, the mother of Jesus. Fear of the unknown, which is basically the opposite of trust and uncertainty. Fear of the unknown is at its very least the underlying issue that most of us face. I think that if you really thought about it, most of our doubt, most of our stress, and even most of our disobedience to God comes from the fear of the unknown. That's really where it comes from. Not knowing what's going to happen next. I don't know if you've ever had an opportunity or a notion from God that He wanted you to do something, and when you thought about the prospect of actually doing that, you felt a little bit of fear. Well, what if I pray for this person and they respond in a way that I don't expect? Maybe even they might even respond negatively to what I pray or what I have to say, a word from the Lord. What if I'm supposed to go and do something that I really don't want to do and I'm actually even afraid of? It's the uncertainty of what we are experiencing. It's the great what if. And I think that most of us have a what if floating through our brains more often than not, even subconsciously. What if? What if this happens? What if this happens? What if this doesn't happen? What if that doesn't happen? Well, that creates fear, creates stress, anxiety. And so, but instead of preaching a sort of a self-help book this morning, I kind of wanted to take a look at some people. I wanted to talk about some people who are really meeting this challenge in a very, very uncommon way. And like I said before, this morning I want to talk about the character of Mary. The best story, the best biblical story of how Mary responded to this is found in Luke chapter 1. And if you want to turn there with me, in fact, that would be great. It's found, the first piece of scripture that I would like to read is found in Luke chapter 1, verses 26 to 38. Luke chapter 1, verses 26 to 38, it says this. In the sixth month of Elizabeth's pregnancy, God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth, a town in Galilee, to a virgin pledged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of David. The virgin's name was Mary. The angel went to her and said, "Greetings, you who are highly favored. The Lord is with you." Mary was greatly troubled at his words and wondered what kind of greeting this might be. But the angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary. You have found favor with God. You will conceive and give birth to a son, and you are to call him Jesus. He will be great, and he will be called the Son of the Most High. The Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over Jacob's descendants forever. His kingdom will never end." "How will this be, Mary?" asked the angel, "since I am a virgin." The angel answered, "The Holy Spirit will come on you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. So the Holy One to be born will be called the Son of God. Even Elizabeth, your relative, is going to have a child in her old age, and she who was said to be unable to conceive is in her sixth month. For no word from God will ever fail." "I am the Lord's servant," Mary answered. May your word to me be fulfilled." And then the angel left her. This is a very uncommon reaction in Mary's circumstance. And most of you, especially if you've grown up in the church, you would understand that that a teenage pregnancy outside of wedlock was not common in Mary's time. In fact, Mary had some serious questions in her head, because even as the angel is talking to Mary about what is going to happen, you're going to conceive and you're going to give the baby the name Jesus, and Jesus will be the Son of God, her question is not, or her mind is not filled with, "Wait a second, I'm going to give birth to the Messiah?" No, her question is, Has God heard of the birds and the bees? Because this is not really possible. Like, how exactly will this be? She's trying to figure out how this is going to happen in the physical. And of course, the angel gives her some sort of explanation, which most of us, I think if we were really honest with ourselves, we would look at that and go, "I still don't get what you're saying. Because this doesn't make any sense." And of course, most things that God says that he wants to do with spiritual power make no sense to us. They make no sense to us whatsoever. And yet Mary continues to listen very patiently because, well, there's a powerful angel in front of her and she doesn't really have a choice. But she continues to listen. And at the very end of what he has to say, what does she say back to him? "I am the Lord's servant. May it be to me as you have said." That is a very, very, very powerful statement when you consider what God actually said about her state in Deuteronomy chapter 22. What we may not understand is that if Mary had been found to be pregnant, most people would obviously think that she has had sexual relations. And if those sexual relations were not admitted to by Joseph, people would have thought that she had those relations outside of her betrothal to Joseph. Now, it was not actually uncommon that sexual relationships did happen between people who were betrothed to each other. Because betrothal back then was actually almost as serious and significant as the actual marriage vows, which is why we read that Joseph was planning on divorcing her quietly, right? Well, they hadn't actually been married yet. However, this kind of thing would have taken a divorce of sorts, because in the minds of the nation, they were already joined because they were betrothed to each other. And so for a pregnancy to happen in that kind of a relationship, that was not actually the problem. The problem was that Joseph was not the father. And so if Joseph is not the father, someone else is going to be the father. And so everyone around Mary would have thought that she would have had committed adultery. And as per the law in Deuteronomy chapter 22, they actually say that Mary should have been stoned to death. So she would have died and the baby would have died. And yet her response to the angel was, "May it be so. I am the Lord's servant." Basically saying, do with me what you please. I am your servant. I am yours. I don't belong to myself. Whatever you want to do in me, that's what you can do. She was not unwise. She knew the potential. Because remember, she didn't know that Joseph was going to have a dream and what was going to happen in his dream. She only knew what she saw in front of her. She only knew her circumstance. And in her circumstance, the potential was actually her death. That's a serious response. And to me, this is a response that is very, very, very uncommon. Even if we look at our own situations, the amount of times that we have been told, I want you to go and do this, and we have all of those what-if questions come into our heads, and we begin to feel stressed, and the anxiety comes over us, very rarely will we just say, "May it be to me the way that you have said." Because Mary knew that the angel was sent straight from God. She didn't know what was going to happen, but she placed herself under God's care. As I was saying earlier, I wanted to look at some individuals who dealt with this whole trust and uncertainty issue. And of course, one of them was Mary, but we wanted to do something different this morning. And we wanted to call up a couple of people that we are all very, very familiar with to have a bit of an interview with them, because their circumstance really speaks into this idea of trust and uncertainty. So we would like to welcome to the stage Andrew and Katie Winger. Would you guys come up? And these guys are going to be really, really nervous, so would you please give them a round of applause? This is very, very scary for them. You can sit wherever you please, and I'm sorry that I've moved your chairs and stuff. This will give us an opportunity to kind of bring to light some things that we may not all be aware of. But most of us are aware that Andrew has been running his own auto shop for the last couple of years, right? Yeah.
2.5 years now.
Two and a half years. And that this is something that some of us actually know he's been looking forward to, but that's not really the, like, owning your own auto shop is not really the dream, is it?
No, not owning an auto shop was actually never really my dream.
Okay. Then would you explain to those who might not know, would you explain what the dream actually is? And where it came from? Can you take us through all that?
Well, I guess the to sum it up, the dream of it is we want to be an example to our kids. We'll follow what God puts on your heart. The dream of it was we wanted to support certain missions groups. We have had a heart for missions, both of us. We can't always be the person going on the trip, but somebody's got to pay for those people to go on the trip, so we wanted our business to be that. And then in turn to also, when you find someone who is actually in need, to be able to help them out with vehicle repairs, right? Because everyone's got to drive a car, and they're always broken.
Too true. So can you tell us how all of that came about? The dream itself has to have some way of getting there. Mm-hmm. So if you're saying that you weren't really interested in opening your own shop, how did that all come about? Well,
to kind of go back to the start of it, it was, how far back is this? Because it goes back almost 10 years, all of this. But when I started my apprenticeship, basically, I didn't really want to be a mechanic at the time. It was kind of where God was leading me. And it was a talent that I always had, and it came out of the parable of the talents. I wanted to develop my talent and use it in turn for the kingdom. Now, to me at the time, that didn't mean I want to go start a shop, because that would just be amazing, right? God could do amazing things through that. It was more, well, I can help people on the side, you know. And, you know, it's a trade. I can use it for things. It made sense to me. So I became a mechanic. And kind of near the end of my apprenticeship, we were married at the time, and Katie said to me one day, "How, you know what? You should really run your own shop. You know, God could totally use that. That would be amazing." And I said, "No, that's a terrible idea. I don't ever want to run my own shop. Do you have any idea what's involved in doing that?" But that feeling lasted for close to 5 years, and it just didn't go away. And progressively got more and more intense, to the point where every Sunday I came here, it didn't matter at all what the message was about. It could have been talking about anything. It didn't matter. It ended in, "Andrew, you need to start a shop."
Actually, when we were doing the pre-interview, we were joking about how Tracy even preached on the book of Leviticus, and even that turned into, "Hey, you should open your own shop."
So we did it. We decided one day to, what did we do? We're just going to look. Well, just see what's out there. You know, we'll just take a step of faith, and if this is what God wants us to do, we'll find something. Well, we found something almost immediately. It fell together, and within like a couple months, we were purchasing the business.
And now you're
2.5 years ago now.
So now you're running this shop, and you finally obeyed what God wanted you to do. You've been struggling with it for 5 years, and finally you said, "Okay, I'm jumping in. We're going to do this."
And everything's great now.
Now things are amazing, right? Right?
Oh, of course, right?
How are things?
Everything is not amazing. It's amazing that we've seen God use us in certain ways. There's people we've blessed through the shop already that we never would have met before, and we don't know what that in turn God will do with that. But it's from the time we bought it, it kind of progressively financially went downhill. We got more customers all the time, but it was just a combination of things. We got to the point kind of this time last year where we were just deciding if we were going to continue trusting God and keep the business, or if we were going to try to get out. Because we were at a point financially where it wasn't carrying itself, and we were going to have to go into some major debt to keep it going. And I actually had a job offer at the time, and after praying about it a lot, we decided not to take the job offer, because we really felt that God wanted us to do this. This is what he called us to, and he didn't call us to it for it to fail. Even though it wasn't working out the way we imagined it would. We imagined it would just be, we trusted God, you know. People tell you it'll be 3 to 5 years before our business makes any money, but that won't be us because God called us to this. So
right.
It'll all be great.
During the pre-interview, we were told, because Pastor Tracy was there as well, we were told that just before you opened this shop, you were working for Toyota.
Yes.
One of the shops here in town, and you had said that was a dream job.
Pretty much, yeah. It was the best paying job I'd ever had. The hours were great. I was home by like 4 o'clock at the latest. It just worked really well for our family. It was a horrible Christian work. It was comfortable. Right.
So during that time when you're saying that you had an opportunity to get out, and you've described to me how you even had a plan that you might be able to get the two guys who were working with you to run the shop. You would,
yeah.
You could have gone back to a dream job, right? Why not take that? Why not take that opportunity?
That was because, like Katie put it, was that God called us to run the shop. He didn't call my employees to do this. He called us to do it. So we made some hard choices and had to lay off one of the guys and continue to keep trusting God, because it was just, I don't know, it would have felt like disobedience to do that.
Mm. A very clear calling then.
Mm-hmm.
Katie, I'd like to ask you, when we were talking to you on Monday night, you said something that really, really struck me, because when it came to this this dream job, you didn't say this was Andrew's dream job. You said this was our dream job. And the two of you have actually been really, really communicating with each other well about how this was going to go, what you should do, and all of that. When it comes to this, how do you deal with this as a married couple? How are you feeling about where things are sitting right now? And Andrew might be talking about, well, I really believe that this is where God is calling us. How are you feeling about all this?
Well, obviously, I've had moments where it's overwhelming and it's disappointing. Because, like Andrew was saying, we were just so naive that, we've had this dream for so many years, and now we're being obedient, and it's going to be magical, and we're just going to be overflowing with business, and we can bless so many people. And you just kind of have in your mind what you're hoping, even though you're doing it to be obedient to the plans that God has for it. So I really had to deal a lot with my feelings that we did this to be obedient, and we have our own hopes and dreams for it, but we really have to be obedient to the way that the Lord wants us to do it. And, you know, it's been really hard on Andrew because he's so good to us, and he just wants to provide and be a good husband and a good father. And it's been really hard on him when it's not working out, and it's just kind of devastating to him sometimes. And I've just had to kind of turn around and take that role of, we are going to do this. God called us to this. He's faithful. And I know he has a plan for this. And maybe it's not going to work out the way we thought. But we're a team. And I just encourage him every day that he brought us here. He has a plan, and we just, that has been such an amazing thing for the both of us. We've learned so much about ourselves, about our marriage, about our relationship with God. Like, how much do we actually trust Him, and what do we trust Him with, and how far are we going to go in our, like, how much are we willing to put forth in this? Like, when a job offer had come through and we could kind of have an easy way out, we could still run this place, it would be profitable, we could bless people that way, but then we could take care of our own family. I don't know, I just kind of got to this point in my life where we were so comfortable, and we're doing this, why not just go all the way and just, okay, we're trusting You, Lord. He knows every situation that we've been in financially, and He's provided every single time. It's just, I don't know, am I answering your question?
The biggest confirmation for me has been that she's always, anyone that knows Katie is that she doesn't like anything like debt or anything that's
out of place,
out of her control.
Everything has its place, and there should be order at all time.
And she's been completely at peace with the whole process. Like, obviously there's times that we're really stressed and we're not at peace in that moment, but it comes back to she's just calm about it when it's completely out of her character. Like, I'm not expecting her to be calm. I don't want to tell her because I feel like she's going to just lose it. But I mean, she does after I leave. But
that's why there's always M&Ms.
Yeah.
No.
M&Ms
and
Oreos.
This has been really good for us because Andrew's always been the one to encourage me and push me along and things. But now it's my turn to show him that I'm here for you. You know, jokingly. Not jokingly, but when we were engaged and we're getting married, and we really thought we were going to do missions together. I told him, I'll go anywhere and do anything with you. So I am really...
Our missions field is Kitchener. We haven't even left the subdivision.
So where are things sitting right now? What are you seeing actually happening, but where's your hope sitting? Because it would be really, really tough, right? If you were to compare what is actually happening in the physical realm to what you see in the spiritual realm, are you able to still connect the two? What do you think is happening with all that?
Not at all. To look at it with physical eye, with human eyes, it's going to be done fairly soon. But spiritually, it's the complete opposite. We're always given that answer that it's, we just need to be trusting Him. It's hard to do that when you're watching it almost fall apart.
Mm-hmm. Katie, when we were sitting together, something that really struck me that these guys obviously wouldn't know because you haven't brought it up yet, but something that really struck me in the very end of our conversation about all of this, you started talking about, well, I just can't wait to see what God is going to do when the funds are going to come in, and when there's this level of faith that God will turn all of this around despite of, like Andrew was saying, despite of the physical circumstances, there's still this undeniable hope that because God said so, this is what's going to happen. Am I right about that?
Yeah.
Where does that come from?
From Jesus. I had this really exciting moment. I don't know, like Aaron can attest to this. I cried for like 6 months when we first started doing this because it was a hot mess in my eyes. Like, what are we doing? It was all out of order. I couldn't handle it. And it was so overwhelming. And it was such a new level of trust that neither of us have ever had to do before with, like, our family. Like, we have little kids. And Cole had just been born. And he cried if the wind blew the wrong way. Like, he just cried all the time. I was just so emotional. And then one day I just woke up and I thought, that's not what my story is going to be for this place. I don't want my girls to remember their mom screaming and crying and being a wacko stress job all the time because we're living the dream that God gave to us. That's not that's not good for anyone. It's not encouraging. And so I just knew, like Andrew was saying, I do need to have order in my life. That's just how I am. And I was just at peace about this, even though we're looking at it now, like, it's almost funny. It's such a disaster, but at the same time, we're so at peace about it. So I don't know, one morning I just woke up and I thought, I'm not going to have that attitude. He brought us here. He has a plan. He is faithful. He has proved himself faithful over these past few months. We have no reason not to trust him. And I just kind of, I don't know. Anytime we have a moment of doubt, I just, no, that is not from his word. That is not from him. I'm not listening to that.
It's like terrifying excitement.
It is. It's weird. We're excited about the chaos.
It's terrifying that it's like with your human eyes, you're like, well, this isn't going, it's not working. What are you doing, God? But it's totally exciting because it's like, well, we're at this point where, I don't know where to, I've poured everything I have into this shop, everything I can imagine. I stretched myself beyond what I thought I was able to do. And it like took me here and I need to be here. To work, it has to be of God because I have nothing else. Mm-hmm. It's as far as I can take it.
This is a strange story because most of us would probably be expecting right now the silver lining, the end result. Yes, God came through.
Well, that's what we're waiting for.
Right.
Waiting.
And that was the intent. You were really, really hoping that that you could share a testimony with the congregation. And then at one point you had said to Katie, maybe we're not supposed to talk about it at the very end when God did come through, but maybe we're supposed to talk about it right now. What are you hoping that will do for us as we're hearing that?
We just really wanted to be an encouragement to anyone else who might have a God dream. Yeah, like. Feel like there's a calling on them of something they need to do, and to just do it. Like it's, like I said, it's completely terrifying because the story's not done. We don't know what's if there is a silver lining. Like maybe the whole point was just so we'd sit up here and tell people this. You know, or we may never know why he called us to do this.
Or maybe it'll be so, but
no.
It's just been exciting that we did this. We were obedient and we trusted him with everything that we have. And I have never given everything. I'm just focusing on him every day and we're just going.
It's not finished, but it's, I forget what I was going to say.
The process of this whole process, although terrifying, has obviously done a great job in your spirit.
Yeah, I would do it again, even though it's, from what I can see right now, it's going to be finished, but my spirit tells me that it won't.
I'm not just encouraged by my conversations with them; I am spurred on. I love that phrase, being spurred on, because it gives me a picture of a rider on his horse taking the spur and jabbing it into the horse's side in order to make it move. And that's kind of what God is doing to me when I have these conversations, when I hear these stories. It's a spur into my side, reminding me that there is more. There's so much more. When I think about these kinds of uncommon responses to impossible situations, like Mary, like the Wingers, I recognize that we are called to that kind of faith all the time. All the time. The idea of just showing up to church on a Sunday morning and throwing up a couple of prayers throughout the week, that is not God's design for us. God's design for us is to trust him wholeheartedly, to see him work in and through us on a daily basis, minute by minute, to experience him. That's why this Advent season is called, Do You Hear What I Hear? Are you hearing what I'm hearing? When I hear about the Christmas story, isn't the entire thing just completely unbelievable? Are you really hearing what I'm hearing? Because what I'm hearing is that the absolutely physically impossible happened. But not only the physically impossible happened, the spiritually impossible happened. You and I were full of sin. We were in the muck and the mire, and God Himself decided, I'm going to become a human being. I'm going to come down to earth and I'm going to live like them. I'm going to die on the cross, even though I was completely without sin, and I'm going to cover their sins so that they can be completely forgiven forevermore, so that they can live with me in my house. That is completely unbelievable. And yet we believe it. In fact, we go out there and we tell other people about it. But this is so unbelievably impossible that compared to the impossibilities in our lives, like physical healing, for example, or God being able to provide for our families, that's small potatoes compared to what we believe. Compared to what we confess to other people, yeah, I totally believe that God saved me from my sin. I'm going to live eternally. What? But I'm not sure if God can provide for my family. Well, but you believe something much more unbelievable than that. And so I want to turn to John. I already confused my entire youth group with this the other day. Not John. First John. Okay. Yes, he's got four books that are named after him, and then he wrote another one that's even more confusing. First John chapter 1. First John chapter 1, starting at verse 1. He says something here that you kind of need to read between the lines, and at first you might be looking at it wondering, what does this have to do with anything? It says this: that which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we have looked at and our hands have touched, we proclaim concerning the word of life. The life appeared, we have seen it and testify to it, and we proclaim to you the eternal life which was with the Father and has appeared to us. We proclaim to you what we have seen and heard, so that you also may have fellowship with us. And our fellowship is with the Father and with His Son, Jesus Christ. We write this to make our joy complete. These are the theme verses for this Advent season. And here's why. In the first two verses of this entire letter, he literally says, what we're talking about here, what we are proclaiming to you, this is not something that we got secondhand. This is not something that we heard from someone else and we're like, yeah, I totally believe that. No, no, no. What he's saying is we heard it ourselves. I saw it with my own eyes. I experienced the entire thing myself. I am so convinced that this is the truth. I am so convinced that what I am trying to tell you about, the word of life, Jesus Christ Himself, I know that it's the truth because I heard it with my own ears. I saw it with my own eyes. It was unbelievable, but I know I was there. I experienced it. Are you hearing and seeing and experiencing what John heard and saw and experienced? Are you hearing it, seeing it, experiencing it, knowing it because of that? He writes with such passion in these first four verses. You know that he is absolutely 100% convinced in the hope that he is proclaiming to others. There's no shadow of doubt in his mind, and there is none in mine. And every once in a while, the enemy wants to come in with his lies and deceive me and deceive you that maybe what we're reading, maybe what we've experienced, we just misinterpreted it or misunderstood it. But we haven't. We have not. I was going to read this, but I'm running out of time, so I'll just tell you the story. In the next few verses, in verses 39 to 45, what Mary does is really, really cool, because Mary ends up going to see Elizabeth. So Elizabeth was found to be with child even though she was barren. She was completely unable to have children, and she was on in years. But the Lord appeared to her husband, Zechariah, and he told her, your wife, even though she is barren, she will be with child. And she was. That's why in the very beginning of these verses that are read earlier, in Elizabeth's sixth month, this is what happened to Mary. And then Mary goes to see her. And Mary goes to see Elizabeth, and something spiritually powerful happens. The baby inside her womb, who was John the Baptist, by the way, leapt with joy because his mother, Elizabeth, was speaking to the mother of Christ. Incredible. And what she has to say, what Elizabeth has to say about Mary is absolutely fantastic. She said, "Blessed are you among women." And when you consider that most people would very likely have written Mary off, because very likely the story of her virgin birth was beginning to spread. Yeah, okay, whatever. Virgin birth, yeah. Mm-hmm. For some reason, Elizabeth, in a loud voice, explained, "Blessed are you among women, and blessed is the child you bear. But why am I so favored that the mother of my Lord should come to me? Blessed is she who delivered, that the Lord would fulfill his promise to her." Do you know why Elizabeth believed Mary? Because she heard and she saw and experienced the impossible herself. She knew that Jesus, or she knew that God, was capable of doing what he said he would do, because she experienced it in her own life. So my question is this morning, will you trust in uncertainty? Will you trust? Will you have conversations with each other? Others who have experienced that power of God in their lives, will you be encouraged by their story? Will you take people in who are suffering through the growing pains that God is putting them through, as they are trusting in uncertainty? Will you encourage them by your story? Because you have heard and you have seen and you've experienced yourself. If I can get the worship team to come and do some songs of worship, that would be great. These next few moments, I believe, can be a very, very significant moment. I am fully aware that when I speak about these things, that there are people in the room who are like, dude, that guy's talking straight at me. I need faith and uncertainty. I need to trust God. That's because we kind of all do. But I know that there are some really, really significant strides that God may be asking you to take. And you may be sitting there saying, I don't even know how to do this. I don't even know how to move forward here. I don't know how to trust God in these uncertain times. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to go into a time of prayer. And if you really feel like God is calling you to come up here to be prayed for, we have some excellent people here in the congregation who would love to pray with you and for you. I will pray with you, but please don't pass up this opportunity to have people pray over you, and for the Lord to be able to give you the strength to move forward. That is an opportunity that we would love to have, that we would love to take with you. We're not pushing you, but certainly take the opportunity while the worship team is playing to come forward, get prayed for, get people on your side to spur you on, get people to come and say, you can do this. I'm standing here with you. You don't need to walk this thing alone. This is an opportunity for you to kind of get it off of your chest. That's something that Andrew and I do with each other on a regular basis, because we, for some reason in the church, we think that we have to have it all together. We think we need to have all of the answers. We think that because God has called us to do something, that we're supposed to have strength in all of that and never show any kind of signs of weakness. But that's a lie from the enemy. We're supposed to rely on each other. We're supposed to lean on each other. We're supposed to be real with each other so that we can hold each other up. Allow us to do that for you.